Welcome to Gima's Tales for Children. Each week we visit a different part of the world to hear stories, legends, and myths. Some of these stories are so old that the origin has been lost in time. Some are new, and some are timeless. Join us as we travel this week to Italy. Italy has two small independent states inside its borders, Vatican City, where the Pope lives, and the Principality of San Marino. Rome is the capital and was the home of the ancient Romans, a civilization that grew into a huge empire. Italy has many earthquakes and volcanoes. For further information about Italy for children, I suggest www.sciencekids.co.nz. Our first tale is quite filled with magic. Here is the story of the three sisters. There was at one time a woman who had three daughters, two of whom were so unlucky that nothing ever succeeded with them. All their projects went wrong. All their hopes were turned to chaff. But the youngest, who was named Nella, was born to good luck, and I verily believe that at her birth, all things conspired to bestow on her the best and choicest gifts in their power. The sky gave her the perfection of its light, Venus, matchless beauty of form, love, the first dart of his power, nature, the flower of manners. She never set about any work that it did not go off to a nicety. She never took anything in hand that it did not succeed to a hair. She never stood up to dance that she did not sit down with applause. On which account, she was envied by her jealous sisters, yet not so much as she was loved and wished well to by all the others. As greatly as her sisters desired to put her underground, so much more did other folks carry her on the palm of their hands. Now there was in that country a prince who was so attracted by her beauty that he secretly married her, and in order that they might enjoy one another's company without exciting the suspicion of the mother, who was a wicked woman, the prince made a crystal passage which led from the royal palace directly into Nella's apartment, although it was 8 miles distance. Then he gave her a certain powder, saying, "Every time you wish to see me, throw a little of this powder into the fire, and instantly I will come through the passage as quick as a bird, running along the crystal road to gaze upon this face of silver." Having arranged it thus, not a night passed that the prince did not go in and out, backwards and forwards along the crystal passage, until at last the sisters, who were spying the actions of Nella, found out the secret and laid a plan to put a stop to the sport. And in order to cut the thread at once, they went and broke the passage here and there, so that when the unhappy girl threw the powder into the fire to give the signal to her husband, the prince, who used always to come running in furious haste, hurt himself in such a manner against the broken crystal that it was truly a pitiable sight to see, and being unable to pass further on, he turned back with terrible cuts all over his body. Then he sent for all the doctors in the town, but as the crystal was enchanted, the wounds were mortal, and no human remedy availed. When the king saw this, despairing of his son's condition, he sent out a proclamation that whoever would cure the wounds of the prince, if a woman, she would have him for a husband, if a man, he should have half the kingdom. Now when Nella, who was pining away from the loss of the prince, heard this, she dyed her face, disguised herself, and, unknown to her sisters, she left home to go to see him before his death. But as by this time the sun was setting, night overtook her in a wood close to the house of an ogre, where, in order to get out of the way of danger, she climbed up into a tree. Meanwhile, the ogre and his wife were sitting at table, with the windows open in order to enjoy the fresh air while they ate. As soon as they had emptied their cups and put out the lamps, they began to chat of one thing and another, so that Nella, who was near to them, heard every word they spoke. Among other things, the ogress said to her husband, "My pretty hairy hide, tell me what news, what do you say abroad in the world?" And he answered, "Trust me, everything's going topsy-turvy and awry." "But what is it?" replied his wife. "Why, I could tell pretty stories of it all, the confusion that's going on," replied the ogre. "For one hears things that are enough to drive one mad, such as buffoons rewarded with gifts, Rogues esteemed, cowards honored, robbers protected, and honest men little thought of. But as these things only vex one, I will merely tell you what has befallen the king's son. He had made a crystal path along which he used to go to visit a pretty lass, but by some means or other, I know not how, all the road has been broken, and as he was going along the passage as usual, he has wounded himself in such a manner that he will surely die of his wounds. The king has indeed issued a proclamation with great promises to whoever cures his son, but it's all labor lost, and the best he can do is quickly to get ready mourning and prepare the funeral. When Nella heard the cause of the prince's illness, she sobbed and wept bitterly and said to herself, "Who is this wicked soul who has broken the passage and caused so much sorrow?" But as the ogress now went on speaking, Nella was as silent as a mouse and listened. "And is it possible," said the ogress, "that the world is lost to this poor prince, and that no remedy can be found for his malady?" "Hark ye, granny," replied the ogre, "the doctors are not called upon to find remedies that may pass the bounds of nature. This is not a fever that will yield to medicine and diet, much less are these ordinary wounds, which require lint and oil, for the charm that was on the broken glass produces the same effect as onion juice does on the iron heads of arrows, which makes the wound incurable. There is one thing only that could save his life, but don't ask me to tell it to you, for it is a thing of importance." "Do tell me, dear old Long Tusk," cried the ogress. "Tell me, if you would not see me die." "Well, then," said the ogre, "I will tell you, provided you promise me not to confide it to any living soul, for it would be the ruin of our house and the destruction of our lives." "Fear nothing, my dear sweet little husband," replied the ogress, "for you shall sooner see pigs with horns, apes with tails, moles with eyes, than a single word should pass my lips." And so saying, she put one hand upon the other and swore to it. "You must know, then," said the ogre, "that there is nothing under the sky nor above the ground that can save the prince from the snares of death, but for our fat. If his wounds are anointed with this, his soul will be arrested, which is just at the point of leaving the dwelling of his body." Nella, who overheard all that had passed, waited until they had finished their chat, and then, getting down from the tree and taking heart, she knocked at the ogre's door, crying, "Ah, my good masters, I pray you for charity, alms, some sign of compassion. Have a little pity on a poor, miserable, wretched creature, who is banished by fate far from her own country, and deprived of all human aid, who has been overtaken by night in this wood, and is dying of cold and hunger." And crying thus, she went on knocking and knocking at the door. Upon hearing this deafening noise, the ogress was going to throw her half a loaf and send her away, but the ogre, who was more greedy of flesh than the squirrel is of nuts, the bear of honey, the cat of fish, the sheep of salt, or the ass of bran, said to his wife, "Let the poor creature come in, for if she sleeps in the fields, who knows but she may be eaten up by some wolf." In short, he talked so much that his wife at length opened the door for Nella, while with all his pretended charity, her husband was all the time reckoning on making four mouthfuls of her. But first, while Nella ate, they decided to have a drink of good Italian wine. The ogre and his wife drank till they were fairly tipsy. When they lay down to sleep, Nella took a knife from a cupboard and quickly killed both of them. Then she put the fat into a flask and went straight to the court, where, presenting herself before the king, she offered to cure the prince. At this the king was overjoyed and led her to the chamber of his son, and no sooner had she anointed him well with the fat than the wound closed in a moment, just as if she had thrown water on a fire. When the king saw this, he said to his son, "This good woman deserves the reward promised by the proclamation, and that you shall marry her." But the prince replied, "It's hopeless, for I have no storeroom full of hearts in my body to share among so many. My heart is already disposed of, and another woman is already the mistress of it." Nella, hearing this, said, "You should no longer think of her who has been the cause of all your misfortune." "My misfortune has been brought on me by her sisters," replied the prince, "and they shall repent it." "Then do you really love her?" said Nella, and the prince replied, "More than my own life." "Embrace me then," said Nella, "for I am the fire of your heart." But the prince, seeing the dark hue of her face, answered, "I would sooner take you for the coal than the fire, so keep off, don't blacken me." Whereupon Nella, perceiving that he did not know her, called for a basin of clean water and washed her face. As soon as the cloud of soot was removed, the sun shone forth, and the prince, recognizing her, pressed her to his heart and acknowledged her for his wife. There was such a feast and celebration that next day the entire country celebrated the happy couple, and the prince and Nella, now a princess, lived in the palace for many years and loved each other dearly until the day they died. This next story is an Italian version of Cinderella, even though it is quite different in some ways. Here is, and yes, its title is Cinderella. Once upon a time, there was a man who had three daughters. He was once ordered away to go to work and said to them, "Since I'm about making a journey, what do you want me to bring when I return?" One asked for a handsome dress, the other a fine hat and a beautiful shawl. He said to the youngest, "And you, Cinderella, what do you want?" They called her Cinderella because she always sat in the chimney corner. "You must buy me a little bird, and I shall name it Verdelio." The oldest sister said, "The simpleton! She does not know what to do with the bird. Instead of ordering a handsome dress, a fine shawl, she takes a bird. Who knows what she will do with it?" The father went, and on his return brought the dress, hat, and shawl for the two sisters, and the little bird for Cinderella. The father was employed at the court, and one day the king said to him, "I am going to give three balls. If you want to bring your daughters, do so. They will amuse themselves a little." "As you wish," he replied. He went home and said, "What do you think, girls? His Majesty wishes you to attend his ball." The two oldest sisters were overjoyed at the prospect of the ball. The oldest smirked and said to Cinderella, "There, you see, if you'd only asked for a handsome dress, this evening we are going to the ball." And Cinderella replied, "It matters nothing to me. You go. I am not going to the ball." And their father, who really didn't care much for his youngest daughter, since she was so dirty and covered in ashes all the time, added, "We'll be late. Let's go. Dress and come along. Let her stay." When they had gone, she went to the bird and said, "Oh, bird, Verdelio, make me more beautiful than I am." She became clothed in a sea-green dress with so many diamonds that it blinded you to behold her. The bird made ready two purses of money and said to her, "Take these two purses, enter your carriage, and away." She set out for the ball and left the bird Verdelio at home. She entered the ballroom. Scarcely had the gentleman seen this beautiful lady when the king began to dance with her. Indeed, he danced with her the whole evening. After he had danced with her all the evening, His Majesty stopped, and she stood by her sisters. While she was at her sister's side, she drew out her handkerchief, and a bracelet fell out. "Oh, Signora," said the eldest sister, "you have dropped this." "Keep it for yourself," Cinderella said. The king had given orders that when this lady went away, his servants should find out where she lived. So when Cinderella left the ball, they began to chase after the carriage. Cinderella saw that she was being followed, so she took the money the bird had given her and began to throw it out of the window of the carriage. The greedy servants, seeing all that money, thought no more of her, but stopped to pick it up. She returned home and went upstairs. "Oh, bird, Verdelio, make me homelier than I am." In an instant, the bird transformed her gown into rags and covered her in ashes from the fire. When the sisters returned, they cried, "Cinderella!" "Oh, leave her alone," said her father. "She's asleep now. Leave her alone." But they went up and showed her the large and beautiful bracelet. "Do you see, you simpleton? You might have had it." "It matters nothing to me," said Cinderella. Meanwhile, the king called to his servants to appear before him. He wanted to know where the beautiful lady he had danced with all night lived. He asked them, "How did the matter go?" They fell at his feet. "Oh, sire, forgive us. She threw out so much money from the carriage that we all stopped to pick it up. When we looked up, the carriage had disappeared." "Wretches, you are nothing else," he said. "Were you afraid of not being rewarded? Well, tomorrow evening you must pay attention and follow her under pain of death." The next evening, the second ball was held. The oldest sister said, Poor Cinderella, she has nothing to wear to go to the ball. Oh, Cinderella replied, don't bother me, I don't want to go. So they began to adorn themselves more handsomely than the former evening and departed. When they had gone, Cinderella went to the bird and said, little bird Verdelio, make me more beautiful than I am. Then she became clothed in a gown of sea green, embroidered with all the fish of the sea, mingled with diamonds more than you could believe. The bird said, take these two bags of sand, and when you are followed, throw it out, and so they will be blinded. She entered her carriage and set out for the ball. As soon as His Majesty saw her, he began to dance with her, and danced as long as he could. When he was finished, she placed herself near her sisters, drew out her handkerchief, and there fell out a beautiful necklace all made of diamonds. The second sister said, Signora, you have dropped this. She replied, keep it for yourself. After a while, Cinderella left the ball. The servants, now under pain of death, were all on the alert and followed her. She began to throw out all the sand, and they were blinded. She went home, dismounted, and went upstairs. Little bird Verdelio, make me homelier than I am. And the bird transformed her gown into rags and covered her with ashes from the fire. When her sisters returned, they began from below. Cinderella, if you only knew what that lady gave us. Cinderella replied, it matters nothing to me. And the sisters just laughed, and one said, silly girl, you'll never amount to anything. You're just good for keeping the house clean and sweeping up the ashes. Their father just said, let's go to supper and let her alone. Cinderella, you're really silly. The king, who was waiting for his servants to learn where she lived, was shocked when they didn't appear. He sent out some soldiers who found them wandering alongside the road, all blinded by the sand that Cinderella had thrown out of the carriage on her way home. He exclaimed, either this lady is some fairy, or she must have some fairy who protects her. The next day the sisters began, well, Cinderella, this is the last ball tonight. Too bad, you have nothing to wear. When they were all prepared, they went to the ball with their father. When they had departed, Cinderella went to the bird. Little bird Verdelio, make me more beautiful than I am. Then she was dressed in all the colors of the heavens, all the comets, the stars and moon on her dress, and the sun on her brow. She entered the ballroom. His Majesty began to dance, but he could not look at her. He was so dazzled. He had already given orders to his servants to be on the lookout, under pain of death, to find out where this beautiful creature lived. After she had danced even longer than on the previous evenings, she placed herself by her father's side, drew out her handkerchief, and there fell out a snuffbox of gold, full of money. Signora, you have dropped this snuffbox, her father remarked. Keep it for yourself, she replied. Her father opened it and saw the money, and naturally was filled with joy. After she had remained a time, she went home, as usual. The servants followed her on horseback, quickly at a distance from the carriage. But, oh dear, Cinderella realized that she had not prepared anything to throw that evening. Oh, she cried, what shall I do? She left the carriage quickly and in her haste lost one of her slippers. The servants picked it up, took the number of the house, and went away. Cinderella hurried upstairs and said, little bird Verdelio, make me more homely than I am. But this time the bird did not answer. After she had repeated it three or four times, it finally answered, enough, Cinderella. I ought not to make you more homely, but... And the bird transformed her gown once again into rags and covered her with ashes from the fire. Then the bird continued, what are you going to do now? You're discovered. She began to weep in earnest. When her sisters returned, they cried, Cinderella, see what a beautiful snuff box. If you had gone, you might have had it. But Cinderella only replied, I do not care. Go away. Then their father called her sisters to supper, and Cinderella went up to the attic and climbed into her little bed. At the palace, the servants happily went to the king with the slipper and the number of the house. Tomorrow, said His Majesty, as soon as it is day, go to that house, take a carriage, and bring that lady to the palace. The servants took the slipper and went away. The next morning, they knocked at the door to Cinderella's house. Cinderella's father looked out and exclaimed, "Oh, heavens, it's His Majesty's carriage. What does it mean?" He opened the door and the servants entered. "What do you want of me?" asked the father. "How many daughters have you?" one asked. "Two," he replied, for he rarely paid attention to Cinderella. "Well, show them to us." The father called to his daughters, who came down the stairs to the entry. "Sit down," they said to one of them. They tried the slipper on her, but it was 10 times too large. The other one sat down. It was too small for her. The head servant said, "But tell me, good man, have you no other daughters?" "Take care to tell the truth, because His Majesty wishes it under pain of death." The father replied, "Gentlemen, there is another one, but I do not mention it. She's all in the ashes, the coals, if you should see her. I do not call her my daughter from shame." The head servant raised his voice and in a commanding tone said, "We have not come for beauty or for finery. We want to see the girl." Her sisters began to call her, "Cinderella," but she did not answer. They called again, "Cinderella, you must come down. There are some gentlemen who wish to see you." But Cinderella replied, "I don't want to come." The sisters urged her, "But you must come, you see." Cinderella bowed her head. She knew that all would be revealed now. She said, "Very well, tell them I will come in a moment." She went to the little bird. "Ah, little bird Fidelio, make me more beautiful than I am." Then she was dressed as she had been the last evening, with the sun and moon and stars, and in addition great chains, all of gold, everywhere about her. The bird said, "Take me away with you, put me in your bosom." So Cinderella, the bird in her bosom, began to descend the stairs. "Do you hear her?" said the father. "Do you hear her? She's dragging with her the chains from the chimney corner. You can imagine how frightful she will look." But when Cinderella reached the entry hall and they all saw her, they all exclaimed, "Ah," and recognized the lady of the ball. You can imagine how her father and sisters were vexed at her deception. The servants made her sit down and tried on the slipper, and it fitted her. Then they made her enter the carriage and took her to His Majesty, who recognized the lady of the other evenings. And you can imagine that, as in love as he was, he said to her, "Will you be my wife?" Cinderella agreed. She sent for her father and sisters and made them all come to the palace. They celebrated the marriage, and the servants who had discovered where she lived were promoted to the highest positions in the palace as a reward. It seems that not only the story of Cinderella can be found in many countries, but now you are going to hear one about Snow White. Our last story takes place in Tuscany. Here is their version, called Elisa. Once upon a time, there lived a king who had one little girl named Elisa. She was a dear little girl, and her father and mother loved her very much. But presently, her mother died, and the stepmother got quite angry with jealousy of the poor little thing. She thought and she thought what she could do to her, and at last she called a witch and said, "Get rid of Elisa for me." The witch spirited her away into some meadows a long, long way off, in quite another country, and left her there all alone, so that poor little Elisa was very frightened. Presently there came by three fairies, who loved her because she was so pretty, and asked her who she was. She said she was a king's daughter, but she did not know where her home was, or how she had come to be where she was now, and that she was very unhappy. "Come with us," said the fairies, "and we will take care of you." So they led her into another field where there was a big hole. They took her down into the hole, and there was the most beautiful palace that Elisa had ever seen in her life. "This palace is yours," said the fairies. "Live here and do just as you like." Well, time went by, and Elisa forgot her home and was very happy, when one night her stepmother had a dream. She dreamt that Elisa was not dead, but alive and happy. She called the witch again and said, "Elisa's not dead. She's alive and well. Take some ciacchetta, a kind of cake. Put poison in it and take it to her. She's very fond of ciacchetta and will be sure to eat it." So the witch went to the hole and called, "Elisa." "What do you want?" said Elisa. "Here's some ciacchetta for you." "I don't want ciacchetta," said Elisa. "I have plenty." "Well, I'll put it here, and you can take it if you like. so she put it down and went away. Presently there came by a dog, who ate the cicada and immediately fell down dead. In the evening the fairies came home, took up the dog, and showed him to Elisa. "See, you never take anything that anyone brings you," said they, "or this will happen to you too." After a time, the queen dreamt again that Elisa was alive and happy, so she called the witch and said, "Elisa is well and happy. Take a pair of golden slippers this time and bewitch them." When Elisa came up to look at the pretty golden slippers, she took them in her hands, and then she put one on, and afterwards the other. As soon as she had done it, she was quite spellbound and could not move. When the fairies came home, they were very sad. They took her up and put her into the garden with the dog, because they did not know what else to do with her. There she stayed a long, long time, till one day the king's son rode by as he went hunting. He looked through the garden gate and saw Elisa. "Oh, look," said he to the hunters, "look at that lovely girl who does not move. I never saw anyone so beautiful. I must have her." So he went into the garden, took Elisa, carried her home, and put her into a glass case in his room. Now he spent all the time in his room. He would never come out and would not even let the servants in to make his bed, for he loved Elisa more and more every day and could not bear to leave her or to let anyone else see her. "What can be in there?" said the servants. "We can't keep his room clean if we're not allowed to go into it." So they watched their opportunity, and one day when the prince had gone in to take the holy water, they made their way in to dust. "Oh, oh," said they, "the prince was quite wise to keep his room shut up. What a beautiful woman, and what lovely slippers." With that, one went up and said, "This slipper's a little dusty, I'll dust it." While he was doing so, it moved, so he pushed it a little more and it came off altogether. Then he took off the other two, and immediately Elisa came back to life. When the prince came home, he wanted to marry her at once, but his father said, "How do you know who she is? She may be a beggar's daughter." "Oh, no," said Elisa, "I am a princess," and she told them her father's name. Then a grand wedding feast was prepared, to which her father and stepmother were invited, and they came, not knowing who the bride was to be. When they saw Elisa, the father was very glad, but the stepmother was so angry that she went and hanged herself. Nevertheless, the marriage feast went off merrily. Elisa and the prince were, of course, very happy and stayed that way forever. So we've come to the end of our time together today. If you have a story you'd like to hear, please feel free to write me with your request. If you've written a children's story and would like to share it, let me know as well. I welcome your feedback. You can email me at GUIMA, that's G-U-I-M-A, at kciw.org. See you next week. Same time, same place, but very different stories. We'll be traveling back to where I started, the great continent of Africa. But this time, we're going to go to the Congo with vast jungles where forest elephants live and hippos surf in the waves of the western beaches. So stay safe, have fun, and let your imagination soar. This is Gima saying goodbye and happy reading. This has been a production of KCIW LP 100.7 FM in Brookings, Oregon.